From the lakeshore, this is Here Be Monsters. What exactly does your dad do for a living?
A grifter is too strong a word because that implies stealing. My dad is very good at working the system. You know, he cobbles together a living is what he does.
What's his name?
Alan Greenfield.
Like, how do you think he describes what he does?
He has described it as he is a researcher in the shadow world. And he's written a bunch of books. So it's sort of admirable, but also when shit wasn't clicking when you're a kid, it's not as much fun, you know?
You said your parents split up when you were pretty young, right?
Yeah. I was 6 years old, I think. It came like a bolt in the blue from my perspective as a kid at that point.
What happened? Is that too personal?
No, not at all. I heard them arguing. I was outside playing, saw my mom stalk outside with my dad running after her, yelling and screaming in his bare feet. She jumped in a van and drove away in a cloud of dust. At the time, it felt like, oh, here's another day. Here's another day of crazy shit. My dad was very, very good at selling the adventure of the life on the road and the searching for spiritual truths. Remember, this is the 1970s. And in that sort of post-60s haze, there were a whole lot of people who were spiritually seeking, and some of them fell into cults and some of them fell into relationships. The Hollywood version of this is you leave the family for the bad boy. She left the family for like the most normal life she possibly could. Years later, I sort of wrestled with the effects of that, you know, in therapy and in the relationship with my wife and, you know, all of the fun stuff. For years, whatever effect it had was utterly secret to me, like it in terms of my conscious life. My dad only on rare occasions, worked a regular job. He was very good at finding people to finance his adventures. And my grandfather made a lot of money and my dad spent a lot of money. So he was good at doing that. There weren't really normal days until I got into school. And then once I was in school, there were plenty of times that I was plucked out of school to go on various and sundry adventures all over the place, to the point that we got in trouble every now and again.
Have you ever seen an alien?
I have not seen what could be thought of as an extraterrestrial.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
Yes.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
the sad and ignominious end.
The podcast about the unknown.
Is Ott Books is the sponsor of this episode. Is Ott Books is the publisher of spiral-bound self-help manuals, art books, and non-literary works on paper.
Concentration introduced a corridor toward violence. You could travel further and faster than ever before, but the walls kept closing in. No more need for prisons. Incarceration manifested Ott Monks.
What you're hearing right now is the author James Finnegan reading from his new book, which is called Das Kaka Pipital and Other Works in Progress. and it's published by Is Ought Books.
Alien phenomena. It was enough to simply collate what already existed. Preceding centuries passed through it like an electric shock.
All titles from Is Ought Books are available to buy online at is-ought.info. You can also find a link in this episode's show notes. Thank you, Is Ought Books, for sponsoring this episode of Here Be Monsters.
It's plain and serene indifference, but it felt more like remorse.
When I was 7 years old, my parents had divorced about 6 or 7 months before, and my dad started dating this younger woman named Mary. My dad was a serial dater, and even in this short time, I'd met several women. She was the first one who really connected with me. Like, it was a big bummer when they broke up. So I'm 7 years old. My dad doesn't drive, so we all pile into Mary's station wagon. So my dad's friend, Sam, and Mary, and me and my dad pile into the car, because what we're going to do is we're going to go down to South Georgia. He's heard this ghost story about this old, early 19th century church, and we're going out to the island, and we end up getting on a boat, not a ferry boat, but my dad cons this guy into taking us out. And I remember so clearly that, like, it's a pretty sandy beach, but it's all filled with these nettles. And there are bugs all over the place. I was just itchy, like, this is turning into a miserable little kid trip. And Mary, God bless her, is the one who tells me the story of, oh, we're gonna go and see this ghost and it's gonna be amazing and all of that. And I've been hearing these stories. My dad's been taking me on these trips since before I can remember. And I have been let down many a time. So we travel out to the church, which is sort of on the outskirts of the main town on St. Simon's Island. And it was one of those places where she kicked on, you know, the brights, and you still, like, the air was so thick. It was like misty without there being a fog. So you couldn't see very far in front of you. And you swoop around, and sure enough, the church, you know, comes into the light. And it's this real dilapidated, like, it feels like a disappointment waiting to happen, because it's this dilapidated, utterly regular looking church. And we creep up on it and try the door, and the door is chained shut, like there's no way to get in. And we travel all the way around it and trying to figure out what to do. And my dad says, okay, what we're gonna do now is we're just gonna wait. So we sit down out in the front, and I keep just nodding off and nodding off and nodding off. But I finally wake back up, and I'm in Mary's lap. Mary is sound asleep. Sam is sound asleep. But my dad's sitting there with this big smile on his face, and he kind of gives me the high sign and looks up at the window. And sure enough, deep back, just out of the line of light, there is, sure as anything, this pale face looking right down at us. And we sneak around the side while the others are still asleep. My dad sort of jimmied his way into a window. We go inside the church. My dad starts worrying, I wonder if the cops are gonna come, but we creep up into the little belfry near the top. There's no one there. There's no one else in that church. Nobody else was running around in there, like nobody's messing with us or anything like that. But while we're upstairs, we hear something moving down the stairs. We follow the sound, anticipating that it's gonna be a rat or one of our friends or something like that, and there's just nothing. And as I walk out, Mary and Sam are up looking for us, like, what the hell went on? I tell them what my dad and I saw in the window, and they look up and they don't see anything. My dad comes down, he's like, we saw a ghost, we saw the real thing. And as we finally pile back in the car, we're pulling away, and as we're looking back at it, you get that sort of red wash of the brakes on it. Sure enough, that shape is right there, just like a person, and we've been there, man. There was nothing in the room that would have made that look whatsoever. And it was just, it was this incredibly magical moment that made a bunch of these trips that were just my dad running around on wild goose chases feel super fun, because it's this thing you kind of, it's this shared experience that was just sort of butterfly adrenaline feeling that feels a little like scared, but it's just excitement like that. Top of the roller coaster's first big hill feeling, you know? Sorry, I'm gonna have a siren for a second. My apologies, hold on.
Do you think you're more like your mom or more like your dad?
Oh, definitely more like my father, for sure. My mom, I don't have a lot of contact with her. We don't have a lot in common. I share a lot of interests with my dad. I share a lot of foibles in life with my dad. You know, I grew up on the road with a dad, and a lot of that rubbed off. He's a writer, I'm a writer. He's interested in the occult and the bizarre, and he's interested in monsters, I'm interested in monsters. So plenty rubbed off, good and bad.
Maybe we should go into another one of these stories here. I don't know. You told me a very beautiful story about swamp gas.
Oh, the Okefenokee, yeah.
Yeah.
We lived in Tampa, Florida. I would have been about 5. And there were a lot of, like, small life adventures down there. I don't know this. I feel like my dad and my mom were drifting apart. I remember going to the beach a lot with my mom, and my dad was always going off and hanging out with his group of hippie friends. There was a bunch of UFO activity going on in South Georgia and Southeast Alabama. And we were going to go up there and investigate. I was pretty young at the time, like 4 and 5 years old. So George Hortlicker comes down in his new Mustang, still had the new car leather smell. And this is a time when Mustangs were not super cool cars. Between the muscle car and the muscle car was the hatchback. So he comes and he piles in the hatchback. I pile in the hatchback. And it was just he, me, and my dad, I think. I don't think my mom went along. And we end up getting on the road, and George comes up with the idea that we should rent a canoe and go into the Okefenokee Swamp. I wish I could remember what it was we were looking for. I feel like it was a cryptid of some kind or something like that. I can remember, though, that we were rowing through, and it was the off season, so the alligators were not yet quite awake, and the sulfur smell hadn't really started coming out yet because it's still cool, but you could see alligators sleepy in the water as we're rowing through. And as we're going through, and it's pretty deep into dusk, my dad, I remember, starts telling this story about will-o'-the-wisps that would attract sailors and people trying to cross bogs to their doom. And sure enough, out in the mist, we can see this light. My dad says, see, there it is, and starts rowing like madly toward the source of this light that we can see sort of flaring up through the trees, maybe 50 yards away. And he's going to it, and I'm like, what is it, Dad? What is it? And he's like, that's the spirit of the Okefenokee. And he just starts cutting this whole story about how we're going to find the spirit of the Okefenokee Swamp. So we roll around the corner and we see it through the mist. It's this flare that just comes out of nowhere, sort of burpling up, moving skyward and just dissipating. And it turns out, you know, I didn't find this out for a long time, that it's swamp gas. But to my dad, it's the center of the swamp. Like, this is obviously the heart of the place. And we're looking at the heart of the Okefenokee itself. And I remember really distinctly that you could, you know, you got the smell of the sulfur coming up off the water, that faint smell of just vegetation decomposing in your nose. And this light reflecting over the water as it sort of dissipated upward. And I mean, it was just like fire. It's truly beautiful. Manatees in the dark really do look like ladies swimming through the water. And swamp gas really does feel like you're seeing a fairy through the mist. You see how folk stories happen. You know, it's funny talking through these stories. I get a big smile on my face because for all his faults, boy, my dad was good at making something that could have been just a fun camping story into this really wild experience. Maybe it's because he's got a need to experience the wonders, right? The little wonders of the world and contextualize them as meaningful.
Just like, how would you describe your relationship with your dad? Is it congenial? Is it combative? Is it a friendship? What is it?
It's been all of those things at various points over the years. I'd say right now we're congenial. You know, we email back and forth, we tweet back and forth. It's not a super close relationship, but we like each other, if you know what I mean. Like, we have similar interests, but we don't really have a close talk about our feelings kind of relationship. And honestly, never have. Like, that's just sort of not us, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say we're actually in a pretty good place. And in the arc of life, you know, because there were years we didn't talk to each other and that sort of thing. Now we're in kind of a nice, even keel.
Hmm. So you make horror movies for a living.
I do.
Why do you do it?
Scaring someone and feeling scared is such a visceral, immediate reaction. Hearing an audience gasp at a scare, it's powerful.
In interest of time, let's get into this last piece here about the bad burritos.
And yeah.
Then I think we can call it a day.
Right on, dude. So it is 1978 in Tucson, Arizona. My dad has moved to Tucson from Tampa, Florida, ostensibly because he wants to see all the bigs. He wants to go to Roswell. He wants to go to Area 51. And we did all of those things on the way to Tucson, moving in a big van with a trailer on the back of it. We went to all of these places. We got shooed away from Area 51. And then we got to Tucson, and my dad decided that he is going to open a new age bookstore. Lots of UFO books, lots of occult stuff, lots of that sort of thing in this little strip mall in Tucson, Arizona, on the outskirts of town in the shadow of the Catalina Mountain Range, which is this beautiful range of mountains we saw out the back door of our two-bedroom shitty garden apartment that, of course, we were living in right away. Anyway, this bookstore turns out does pretty reasonably well. Like, people are coming in, and my dad ends up making friends with a group of outlaw bikers. That's literally the name of their gang. And they are legit, you know, these Sons of Anarchy looking guys. And including, like, some of these guys are pretty clearly white supremacists. Like, they've got fucking Nazi tattoos and shit like that. But my dad, who is, P.S. at this point, like a 280-pound, 5'8", very ethnic-looking Jewish dude, right? He manages with, you know, his storytelling and everything to get super tight with these guys, especially this dude named Moss, who I believe was a weed and possibly other things slinger, decent guitar player, and super nut for UFOs. We would go out into the desert some nights and watch shooting stars. I remember one night, my dad pointed up and there was one that I don't know what the chemical composition was. I used to know these things. But as it came down, the trail behind it was green as it came through the atmosphere. Like, this was the place if you wanted to go out to look at the sky. So one time we decide we're going to go, these are in the days shortly after the Three Mile Island nuclear disaster. My dad, Moss, my mom, and another dude whose name I can't remember are all going to go up to this anti-nuke protest outside Phoenix, Arizona. Then we're going to go over to Mono Lake, the super highly salinated lake in California that had seen several UFO sightings over it. So we go to this nuclear protest. A couple of guys in suits are there, and my dad gets a whole idea that these are not just FBI agents writing down all the license plates. He gets this story that they are specifically here to look at Moss, my dad, and me because they know we're on to the truth searching out these UFO sites. It was very exciting and not at all the case. We end up getting into the van, leaving the nuclear protest. We go to Mono Lake, which really is this, it's looks like if the moon had water, that's what it looks like. It's all gray. You can taste the salt in your mouth on the air. It's so brackish. And it really is. It looks like this lunar crater surrounded by gray mountain-looking structures, and there's just virtually no one there, and the surface of the lake is almost black. All I kept remembering is my dad was a big fan of the Peter Sellers movie. Oh, what was it called? It's not important. At the end of the movie, Peter Sellers walks on water at the end of the film. And my dad said, the salt is so high in this lake that you'll be able to walk on water. Now, if the punchline were this story that I successfully did that, that would be fucking fantastic. But instead, we end up stopping at just like this little roadside burrito place. Well, turns out this was a terrible, terrible mistake because on the way out to the lake to observe the UFOs, all three of the grown-ups end up getting this horrible, horrible fucking stomach bug. My dad and his buddies are sick as dogs. There were messes to be had. There were people going out beside the highway and all of that. We end up getting to the lake and I walk out and I'm just gonna look at the lake, kick off my flip-flops, head out onto the water. I do not in fact walk on water. But what I do see is lights out over the water. And it's sort of misty, and I'm like, oh, wow, it's like I'm seeing the thing that my dad's been looking for all this time. I go hauling ass back to the parking lot, back to the van, where all of them are sick as all get out. And I'm like, Dad, I see a UFO. And he's like, what? Drags himself out of the van. In the distance, in that moment, I thought for one brief shining moment that I was gonna show my dad a UFO. We go out there and it turns out it is a fire department helicopter. I showed him a helicopter and he went back to the porta potties and the story comes to a sad and ignominious end. But even there, even in like the sick as a dog with a fever and food poisoning and the whole nine yards, when I said it was the real thing, he came running.
Was he mad at you for dragging him out there?
No, I don't think so. I think it was more, we'll get him on the next one, you know?
Did you rebel as a teenager?
Yes. I think my greatest act of rebellion is my wife and I are coming up on 30 years together. Like, the stability side of my life is the rebellion, kind of. Because my favorite thing is the sitting at home and writing things and making them up and not having to leave the house. Like, whereas my dad, I feel like, as he's traveled less, just, you know, with age, you know, he's in his 70s and all of that. Like, he feels it all the time. He's always had the wanderlust. And I guess the difference is the rebellion. And the rebellion is, I like stability. I like stability a lot.
Do you have any sense of what gives your dad so much energy, even in his 70s?
I think he has that. We were talking a little while back about that sense coming out of the 60s and into the 1970s of so many people having this sense of spiritual questing. If two things happen in times of great social discord. One of them is UFO sightings, and the other is spiritual seekers. And in my dad's case, you know, it's not an act. I think that fundamental human quest for the what came before us and what's going after us and are we alone in the universe and all of that, it is absolutely compelling to him. It is to me too. I just write up, you know, I made up stories about him. Like, that's my solution to the problem.
You know, you grew up in this household where there was a different understanding of reality than was a mainstream one. Is that fair to...
For sure. That is very quite fair to say, yes.
And, you know, it's like it or not, the childhoods we have affect how we see the world as adults. And I'm curious to know a little bit about the process you've had of coming to your own conclusions about what is real and what is imagined. And I'm curious about what your thought process is when you're trying to evaluate truthfulness versus stories.
I am a naturally suspicious and skeptical person. You know, going on these various trips and seeing my dad with all the various oddballs, and I say this mostly with affection, the oddballs and weirdos and conspiracy theorists and bikers and all of it that he hung around with as a kid, I have a certain joy in a well-told story. But it does make me exceptionally dubious when I'm looking at UFO coverage or when I'm looking at a ghost story or that sort of thing. And I do, like I said, I write fictional versions of those things for a living. But believing in them comes pretty hard because, again, my dad went into everything wanting it to be real and didn't find much. So I guess where I come down, though, is it's like the poster Mulder has in The X-Files, right? I want to believe, but I find it really, really difficult to do so.
Alex Greenfield is a writer for TV and film. He's written the movies 10.0 Earthquake, The Sand, and The Cookie Mobster. He also used to be the head writer of WWE SmackDown. Alex is currently working on several horror movies based in Jewish mythology. He told me, "I would love to do for Jewish mythology what films like The Grudge and The Ring did for Japanese mythology. It's a whole fascinating world that's largely unexplored." Alex's dad is Alan H. Greenfield. Alan is the author of The Secret Cipher of the Ufonauts, The Story of the Hermetic Brotherhood of Light, Secret Rituals of the Men in Black, and other books. You can find links to both of their works on the Here Be Monsters website, which is hbmpodcast.com. My name is Jeff Emptman, and I made this episode of Here Be Monsters. Music on this episode came from The Black Spot, Circling Lights, and August Freeze. Here Be Monsters is a completely independent podcast, and it relies on the support of sponsors and listeners. So if your business would like to sponsor an episode, please fill out the form at hbmpodcast.com/sponsor. Or if you just appreciate this podcast and would like to send me a small donation each month, visit patreon.com/hbmpodcast. Okay, two announcements real quick here. First, you might have noticed that there was kind of a big gap between last episode and this one, and that's because I was really busy for a second there, helping out with this fantastic audio series for Crooked Media. The series is out now. It's about the life and death of Boris Nemtsov, the Russian dissident who was assassinated practically on the steps of the Kremlin. The story is told by Ben Rhodes, who is the Deputy National Security Advisor for President Obama, and also Zhanna Nemtsova, who is a democracy activist and the daughter of Boris Nemtsov. The whole series is fantastic, it's free to listen to, and you can subscribe on any podcast app. The series is called Another Russia, and I'll link to Another Russia in the show notes and also on the website, which again is hbmpodcast.com. And the second announcement. I'm headed back to Germany for about a month right now, so if you know any good episodes that I could record in the area around Berlin, please send them my way. Here Be Monsters is on Twitter and Instagram at hbmpodcast. The DMs there are always open, and there's also a contact form on the website, which is, for the last time, I promise I'll stop saying it, hbmpodcast.com. And finally, with all that being said, you are wonderful and strange. I hope you know that. So thanks so much for listening. More episodes soon.